Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
So the context of this presentation is my congregation. And story behind how I even got there is only a God thing. And so coming from obviously an ethnicity because I am a dominant, probably 95%, maybe 96% Anglo congregation. And so the cultural competency that I went through to understand not just this congregation, but an Anglo congregation very different from my heritage and from my background experiences, and just the challenges of congregations. I also supervise social workers and community ministers in congregations, and there's no way you could cookie cutter the approaches, because they're all just like very different. Congregations are very different. And then just that what does cross-cultural competency within a congregation. So this is what I was thinking about the presentation. This is what I hope that you will walk away with. And Joanne, what you're thinking about, I mean, just you're just all different, you know. As you work with your colleagues, as you work with your students, as you work with the agencies, it's that. Okay, remember, when you walk into the door of this one and you're reaching out to this congregation and you learn in that style and how it goes, leave it at the door when you go to this other congregation, because you got to go in fresh slate. You know, don't expect what happened over here happened over here, even if it's the same culture, ethnic, poverty, wealth, I mean, all that. It's like you just go into each one very, very different. And so, and that can be exhausting, because my background experience of working in the state of Texas with congregations and doing that in two languages, and you just could, you know, you have to go into a different one. I missed even in the past. I worked not for, but with Child Protective Services. I could go anywhere in communities, and I knew the rules. I knew what, you know, CPS had. I mean, it might be crazy, but I knew this. You always expect this. You know the regulations. I could do that wherever. There's no way you do that. And it's really difficult. And working with, you know, different multiple congregations, because there are no rules. You got to figure them out, and how does that work? And then it changes when the leadership changes. So this pastor went this way, and he does, leaves, and another pastor comes in, so he's this way, you know, so it's you know, not the same. So, I mean, just a challenge. So hence, the uniqueness of each one. And then part of what we threaded throughout this is that the helping my congregations, helping congregations, that as the same thing, as people walk in the door, they're not necessarily going to know the rules of how you do things here. And when I walk into a new congregation or visiting a different church or something, my senses are really heightened to see how friendly they are, first of all, and engaging participants, visitors, and members, and that how culturally competent they are by how they deal with visitors and how they deal with the Sunday morning worship. Because if there's no guidance in this now, let's read from the Bible, and it looks like this. And turn the page, you know, they're guiding, as opposed to just turn to Isaiah 40 and then, what's that? You know, where's that? And a hymn book, and they're picking up the Bible instead of a hymn book. And there's no one there to guide. That helps me with some gauging of where are they in their competency with the culture of visitors or people, especially people who may look like them and the appearance that, oh, you know, they probably know that they're not church, they're maybe passing or something. So I'm in a sense evaluating cultural competency with all the congregations that are, that just that very those impressions. So just very, very briefly on the context of the where all this is coming from. I, as a representative of my agency, I live in San Antonio. I'm housed at the Baptist University of the Americas, and I teach a class for them, and I also co-direct the Latino Leadership Institute. But my work for the agency is outside. And so in my outside work, working with congregations, I went to Woodland, and at the time we had the church had the agency had a collaboration with Kids Hope USA, and Kids Hope USA is a mentoring model for churches to help churches adopt their local school, and they have a model where the church hires a part-time director, and that director enlists mentors from their congregation to go specifically to the local elementary school. And so it's an incredible ministry of helping the church be involved in the community. And so so I was doing this presentation to Woodland at the time when I was in the process and had just left a Hispanic congregation that I've been a member for 12 years. I'm a leader. And actively, I mean, in all kinds of positions, whatever, but those changes of leadership kind of issues. I noticed, I mean, we had lost our pastor, what, 2 years earlier, and we were in this process of looking for a pastor, but the supposed advisors to the pastor they had introduced to us several years before operated in the elder position, but it became an issue of control in that there were men making decisions or women and children were not represented in the decision at the time. So I, you know, this is my church family, so I tried, and I'm a leader, and you know, the help sort of increase their competency by engaging the women and representing children, all those kind of things. And I just kept hitting the football, So it was like, you know, it's time to go. And that was a very, very difficult decision, especially how Latinos are so intense about relationships. And this is your church family. But, and so it was a very, very difficult decision. So it was in that time, I'm doing this presentation in Woodland, and we are an international agency, and they were, the Woodland was in the process of planning a mission trip and going to Guatemala with one of our orphanages that we had a collaboration with. And I had just gotten a call from the agency to say, hey, I want you to think about, we might need you in Guatemala to do some training. And I'm like, okay, good, you know, we'll let you know when you do that. So, right, so these things that God is doing, orchestrating, that when I'm talking about the presentation and he's going, the associate pastor I was talking to, oh, we do all this in missions. We're involved in all of this. And I'm going, okay. So he goes, I don't know if we can take on another department. You know, I've said, oh, by the way, I'm supposed to go to Guatemala, and, you know, so maybe I'll see y'all over there, or I can, you know, I wonder if I can connect with y'all, just that kind of thought. And, but I basically challenged him, I said, you're doing all of this outside, how does your community know you? There's nothing going on that you're touching the lives of your neighbors. And he was like, right, because there was this confident church man, and you're, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, yeah, you're right, we're not making any impact around here. So they immediately got on board with Kids Hope, had a director rating. I mean, like, he was one off the training a week later. Well, this individual called the agency because he was going, oh, I bet you hear about, you know, the Guatemala connection. And he's like, oh, I wonder if I can you know what, I'm just going to call them and talk to them. By the end of the week, I'm traveling with them as the Buckner liaison with this congregation. Now, I don't know them. I've not met them. I've not been to their church. I just have this relationship with the associate pastor. I knew him from that denominational line. So I'm on missions with a group of about, maybe about 20, and I'm hearing language that I really honestly have not heard before from the dominant culture churches. Now, I'm raised as a Hispanic Baptist daughter, mission pastor, and we're the recipients of missions. That's been my life. You know, this, you know, we bring you the product. We come, you're our mission field. That's my heritage. That's what I knew. And so we were, you know, the poor little congregation, and we loved them. I mean, you know, there was, you know, God's working all the time, and every time they come, and we embrace, and they're crying, whatever, but, you know, we're the product. So I was familiar with that kind of relationship with those two assistants. But I'm hearing language and the dialogue from the folks on this mission trip that is very not my experience with dominant Anglo congregations. And by that, I mean, they were really wrestling with justice issues about the condition that the country, the community, and then the children from the orphanage were in. And language of empowerment. And we don't want to be the great white father taking care of, you know, these poor women. And I'm like, I've never heard that view much in my experiences when we have cross-cultural relations. So I really piqued my interest. Now, I'm on a journey trying to find a home church also. But I'm looking for people like me, because that's what I know. I mean, that's my comfort, and I know how a Hispanic church operates, you know, and I'm a leader, and I mean, this is what, so I'm ready to go look for my next place, where it's going to be using me. But I'm doing this. And so they find out, I mean, they know I'm looking for a home church. Oh, you got to come join us. We'd love to have you. Wow, it'd be great, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, I've heard that. You know, that's what churches do. You know, they try to engage you to be a part of their group. And so I'm like, man, you got to pick it. But I love, I, you know, have this relationship with them. So we come back, and I go to Guatemala Sunday. Go to the churches, you know, they're going to talk about and share about the experience. And of course, I have this relationship with them, so I wanted to meet with them and to go and spend time with them. And so I walk in the door, and I'm doing some vulnerability confession here. Because this is part of the story, this is part of the journey that is kind of twofold. Is that I walk in and see very, very, very few people who look like me. And it's an older congregation, and they're the people of wealth. I'm coming from poverty and the poverty framework. And that's the job I do. I mean, that's where I work, you know, with the dominant poverty culture. But these, you can tell, these people have money. And I'm like, wow. I said, okay, but I love the worship. I mean, I was with the folks I know in Guatemala, and I was very impressed. And it was very, very different. So in my mind, I'm going, nah, this is not the church. No, there's no way. This is not, you know, they don't look like it. Helen, I just walk off the curb, go to my car, I go to the bathroom services office is over, and I'm just in my journey in the parking lot. This conviction, big time, that I know is God's voice saying, you're prejudiced. You hypocrite. And I don't hear an audible voice, but the sensation of, don't do that.
You've got it too.
Oh, gosh.
We all got it.
But it was so overwhelming that I immediately realized, I'm blocking here.
Wow.
God's got something I'm blocking, and something significant. And so when I get in the car, in my sanctuary, I break down, and I'm like, you're right. I am a person. I have to admit that. And I have to repent of that and change, not just confess that I am, but change my attitude, because it's like, okay, God, you're doing something. What is it you want me to do? and this is your church. And in my mind, I'm going, my cerebral was going, how can I? I'm going to leave my people. They need my talents. They need my money. There's no way. But I'm like, okay, God, I'm going to surrender. But I'm not so sure. You got to help me with this. So I visit the congregation without I just investigate. And I see a very teachable conversation. Now, to make a long story short, I do end up joining. But it was about a year of accepting that this was my church. Because it was just sort of, there was this, well, my home church. I kept referring to the church and all that, but this was my home church. And just that journey, I'm going so out of my culture and out of my, and even the pastor, it's interesting. He said, when I visited with him just before I joined, and I'm like, here's what I'm going through, and here's, you know, what's about to happen. And you know what his first words were? He goes, you know what, Patty? We really don't need you. We've got leaders galore. We've got seminary, ex-seminary professors. We've got, you know, professionals, and then that. I'm like, I've never heard that before. Not from congregations. He's like, oh, yeah, come. He says, but what you will bring to us will help us with reaching out to our community. You can train us for that. And it's like, wow. So, within the year, I'm joining this missions committee who are used to having lots of money, and they do this with the ministry of the problems. It's not engagement, but it's like, we'll give you this cause, we'll give you this missionary, and this. And I'm like, wow. But as my learning, it's like, that's people of wealth. People who are comfortable. That's how they operate. And then you mean, I mean, it's not this walk alongside and, you know, let me feel the pain, or they kind of, because they're used to doing this. And so the Lord allows me, again, I'm going really fast, the prophetic is a risky business. I walk into a situation where there was an underlying murmur, and then it became a major complaint about how we were serving in the Texas, the Randy River is that border that divides us, and the lower part is called the Rio Grande Valley. So Brownsville here, El Paso to here, we're ministering down over here, and they're upset that this mission teams that went from the 50 and then began the 30 and then it was going down because the Colonia Church, which is like the Hispanic ghetto type, but it's unincorporated and utilities are limited if any. And it's waters. Mexicans who have iron trailer homes. Lots of abuse there and of the economic injustice on Wisconsin. But anyway, they're upset because the church, they're taking clothing and they go down to BBS and, you know, they've got the program. But there didn't seem to be reciprocal. And it's like, wow, we took all these clothes last time and took all these goods and we went and we saw them still there. And we went back, they're still there. And then he's the pastor supporting them and all these different things. And I'm listening to this escalation of anger and I'm like, you know, I'm new. I'm in the first year of church, you know, part of this. So I'm like, so I'm going to ask a couple of questions and share some insights. And so I find out, you know, we're doing a program. Your list. I said, do you mind if I share? I said, you just finished telling me that y'all don't directly talk to the pastor because there's a language issue. You talk to his daughter on the phone. And I'm like, you realize that you've been insulting his pastor all these years. Because the pastor in a Hispanic context, he's But the freaks and havagers, I mean, he needs new rules. And so not to have face-to-face conversations, number one, and to speak through his daughter, and sometimes email, and they allowed me, I mean, and again, here's what kept me at the church, very teachable spirit, because it was immediately deflated. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I didn't realize that. And I said, you know, unfortunately, missionary work along this Texas border, we've equipped for over 100 years, we've equipped those church leaders to do this. When the Americanos come, we train them to do that. Can we walk alongside them, start teaching them, and let them make decisions about what they would like to have happen?
Wow.
So, quick again, cut to, we go down, and I'm the interpreter, and we go down, the team, we do like a pre-mission trip visit with them, and talk to them, and I interpret for the new VBS director, who says, it's good seeing you again, I haven't been here in a while, so I'm out of touch with a lot of things, and I'm going to ask that you teach us what would you like to do with your with this time. And it can still be VBS, but what would you like to do? We don't have a program. There is silence in this room. Because they haven't had anyone at that time. And the pastor walked in about 2 minutes before. Because all the volunteers are there, which are all women. And here comes the pastor. And so I asked the pastor in Spanish, I'm saying, you know, Pastor, what do you think about that? And he's like, sister, we've been waiting for this for a long time. Because they love the church. They have a relationship with the church.
Wow.
And they said, but we didn't even bother them. It was their program. They didn't want to get in the way. So he goes, yes, we're ready to come. And he goes, you know what? We'll give $100. We're ready to help out with $100 towards the refreshments. And so I'm translating that to the leader, and she's going like, oh, and I knew what she was ready to do. She was like, oh, no, that's okay. I'm going, take the money, it's okay. And that empowerment. Well, that began the journey of the competency of the church. It makes it very easy when it's teachable. Very easy. It's a whole lot harder, and they think they know. But all this, I mean, it is those kind of gauging the system in regards to their, are they ready? And that God is already doing something big time. So, the use of self, I mean, what allowed me just to bring the skills as a professional, as the experiences that I've had as a Latina, and how churches operate, and all those kind of things that allow me to begin being an agent of change. And then helping the church see the unseen. Mm-hmm. I was doing it real passionately. Speaking of competency increase, the transformation of the church and how they look at the community. At the micro level, it's that helping as individuals lead them to move out of their comfort zone, having difficult conversations of how we've always done it before. And Joanne, in regards to your concern or your question in regards to an outside system coming in and working with the church, it's so much easier if you have a plant. Find someone, a spy, so to speak. If there's someone within the literally, if there's someone within the congregation, if you find that and you begin the dialogue with the leadership, generally it's going to be a pastor, but how do they already reach out to the community? Who are the leaders? And it may be their missions committee, community ministry team if there's one. That already tells you, okay, we're already there. That makes it a whole lot easier. If not, the women's group, a missionary title or something, if there's something like that, that's who you reach out to. That's who you work with. If you're on the outside coming in, because they're going to already be in that kind of position of influence that can help with bring you in. And I said, and as I said, I mean, I needed, I mean, they knew me, but as I continued revealing self about who I am, where I come from, the prophetic messages as well as the priestly messages, to and in a committee that is tasked with those kind of opportunities to influence and engage congregation, to be able to get engaged and involved with wherever God touches them in their passion. Because they're not all going to be about the aging, they're not all going to be about mission trips, they're not all, but where is that happening? And that's where our journey is at the meso level, is that we're moving, and here's another God thing that is happening. We were in this journey of becoming more united. The challenge came, I don't know where your belief is about Satan and his demons and those kind of beliefs, but where I come from in my training, I mean, he's very real. And we see as evidence, as social workers, we see that bondage, that enslavement to the addictions, to the abuse, all those kind of things. So he is very much alive. And even more so in the church. And he's alive as he disrupts and he creates conflict. We're on this journey of starting to talk to each other, because we're, unfortunately, at these systems, that silo effect, working side by side, and we really don't know what the other's doing. And this is in the congregation. We were just on the brink of starting the committee, starting to talk to each other, because that's what we were doing. Our structure was going. We get a brand new pastor that comes in, brand new. We're his first church. And remember I said they've got all these former seminary professors and, you know, all these religious leaders, coming and all this and that. Older kind, you know, they retire and all this and that. They start giving him grief. After there's this 97% approval to engage, to call him as our pastor, and that 3% continued. And 6 months later, they're challenging and what he's doing, and all he's doing is just realigning staff positions. There's no new hire, whatever, but it's like we've been going through the skills and talents and what they're doing, and this little group comes against him. And they start nipping at his heels, start nipping at issues of the church. And then all of a sudden, it's a steamroll, and so for about a year we go, and it was hard, it was very hard for our pastor. But in the sense of movement and what the church is going through, a transformation, starting from within, it really is a hiccup in God's eyes. It's kind of like, okay. But it was a very healthy hiccup. It was a very healthy conflict. Because what came out of it is this overwhelming support for the pastor, for a young pastor, I mean, brand new. When he came to us, he looked like he's 21. I mean, he's 30, but he looks really, really young. And then he literally starts aging. I was confident he'd do that. But he starts making a little bit older. But it brought the church together. So the journey of working together, and this DNA that was already in the church of missions and mission-minded exploded, because this conflict fast-forwarded that process. And now the education committee is taking on some normal traditional missions committee practices of what they do to help encourage involvement. They're coming on board with doing some awareness training and saying, you know, we're going to get our Sunday school classes now to adopt the different ministry projects that we're already connected to. And they start, okay, so there's a call out to all the Sunday schools saying, which one do you want? It's not an option. Which one are you going to do? And which one are you, you know? So they start adopting the different ministries, and now that's a part of their Sunday school. At the macro level, we began looking in, instead of going all the way over here, we're going to concentrate here, where the church's DNA is, we're going to go deep, not wide, and start, okay, you know what, we haven't been involved in this program in a long, long time, but and all we're doing is giving money, but that's it. You know what, we need to start cutting back or take it out completely. And let's focus on where there's activity already going. so we can go deeper in the investments and start building those relationships with those agencies or services that we're connected to, versus just trying to do all of the offers to all people.
And so just this cross-cultural communication, an example, is... what time did you finish?
9:30?
Right? Okay.
9:45.
Oh,
9:45.
Oh, good, good, good. one more story, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the 150% and then some dialogue. And thank you for your patience and listening, because I really am speaking in words, because there's a whole lot more involved in this process, because it's a long journey. It is a process, and it's a long journey. So we're practicing now what we've been doing. That's the story before of the other mission trip, and what we started changing our perspective on that. We have been carrying and began some very dysfunctional practices with this Golconda Church. At the time that I came in and we started making these changes, it was year 8 that we had been carrying this practice of benevolence, a paternalistic relationship. And so we encouraged them, so that movement of this mission was, we're going to do this side by side. And then next year, y'all take the lead, we're going to support. And we started letting them know, we're about to say goodbye. And because you can do this. But we invite you to come on mission trip with us. Instead of you being the mission, you come on and give. And it's only going to be 40 miles down the road, so it's doable. Because this is a very poor church. And so just come down the road with us and go on mission with us. So we close that relationship, and hopefully it's empowering. So we determined we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to go in with a program. We're not going to go in with, this is you know, where it's like, okay, God, you take over this. Because just that journey, we've gone through the One Helping Hearts. There were 5 out of the 9 Sunday school classes who went through the One Helping Hearts book. Man, if you're not familiar with that, that is really critical. And here's the part for me, learning about my congregation still. And because I've been there 6-7 years. We offer seminars to the Sunday school classes. If they choose to. So 5 classes asked me to do when nothing hurts. And I was very surprised for him, learning the competency of that congregation still, because I feel like I'm still learning. I wasn't sure, but it's a wealthy congregation who does cruises, they're always going on cruises, and they're going off cross-country to see their grandkids, and they're all professionals, and, you know, and here's this, I just am faithful to my prophetic nature, when they're going like, you know, my son's, you know, he got his doctorate, and all this and that, and, you know, we're excited, it's graduation time, we're celebrating, you know, all the degrees and whatever, and I'm like, you know, that's a great of praise, but, you know, I just, you know, want you to remember, just yesterday, I was attending, I did a training with high school leaders, girls, and just this little training about empowerment, I was just a part of this group, and I said, you know, there's still, in our community, in our city, there are confessions of these high schoolers getting ready to go to college, who was saying, my family doesn't support me. And there's a long way to get an education. My brothers and sisters who are after me, my older brothers and sisters who have not graduated, and they're laughing at me because I want to go to college. Mm-hmm. Now, for our world, we're familiar with that. We know that. But here's this wealthy, you know, we've targeted and all of a sudden that. And I'm like, you know, I just want to remind y'all and ask you to pray for this young lady, you know, because that's in our world, and our education is just not supported. And so when we do mission trips and we go and encourage, I mean, we bring it's natural and normal to us. It's an encouragement to others. So, there we go. Remember, there's another world out there. So, the development, the process that we're in, so excited to be doing this. We have just begun a journey with the congregation that lives right across this, Mexico. Violence, if you are aware of all these.
Yes.
In particular along the border.
Yes.
Mexico, the border is first. And so, and it is a Mexican congregation. We have a team whose primary role is the Latin movement. That's it. No program, no, we can do this, we can bring these resources, is to get to know who they are. And we're in the first year of that journey. Just the dialogue. We've gone twice to do the listening on site, and then we realize, and the pastor said, well, but we do want to do some things together. It's sort of vacation Bible school, but not really. We did just ESL and have conversations, not a formal class or anything. Building cement. I mean, that's very common in Mexico, but not for us. So we're alongside them building cement walls. And but it's that the relationships are being built as we're around, you know, projects and you know, just different things. Well, we're about to receive them, this Hispanic congregation, who will probably have some of them cannot come because they can't cross the border. So some of their leaders can't come. But they've told us now, they're bringing 25 people to be on mission trip to our congregation. And they're coming in a couple of weeks. We've been in a frenzy getting everything ready and what we're going to do. That will be a joint ministry. We're involved, and our church is involved in Habitat for Humanity. So some of them are going to come with us to do the Habitat for Humanity, do the build alongside of the Saturday that they come. Now, when we started talking about this relationship and different congregants, and we were saying, some of the women are coming, and you know what? I bet they can teach us how to cook. You know, Mexican food. Oh, our women were like, yeah, I don't want to bet. So part of some of the we're going to do is do a joint cooking, how do you cook authentic Mexican food, and some casseroles that we do so well. And our children, are going to be in music camp with some of their leadership, because the pastor said, you know, I really don't have good leaders in music. They have like 5 or 6 preaching points in parks and just really impoverished neighborhoods, so they have some preaching points. We would love to train some music leaders so that they can be in those preaching points. So we're going to do a music camp focus, but at the same time teaching leadership for both the Woodland children and the USLOPIS.NOA children to prepare for a Christmas program that they do in these different preaching books in different areas that they serve. So we're thinking, wow, we get to start with our young kids to start influencing that DNA of the church. Let's see, that Sunday morning, the joint, the pastor is going to, we're going to have fair trade. So they've been invited, it's Fair Trade Sunday, so they've been invited to bring some of the products that they've been making. We're going to have the Lord's Supper. So they'll be the joint, you know, some of their, the deacons can come. We don't know how many of them will be able to come. But along with our deacons and side by side with the pastor, doing this worship, the kids who have been the Saturday, you know, doing a music camp are going to do some songs in English and Spanish together, our kids together. So that intentional joint, you know, worship time. And Saturday night, it's going to be all dialogue, that's all. We're just going to fellowship and literally, I mean, just orchestrate it so if my glance over here and Lulu's over here, it's like all that flow so we can invite the congregation on this journey of listen. Because right now it's been key leaders we're getting to know and whatever, so now the whole congregation is. The becoming 150%, I just want to introduce to you, basically, and I list the resources. You'll hear me mention what helping hurts, but on the Lord. My agency, as well as my church, has been introduced to these two resources that serves as a guide. And the Ministry Cross-Culturally is where the 150% concept. It's basically the premise is that the culture that I'm not familiar with, I'm still going to retain a lot of mine, but the intention of I'm going to devote and try to become 25% competent to learn who they are. Hence our journey of listen. The congregation is moving towards becoming 150% to learn the customs, the cultures, why do you do what you do? Here's what, you know, that vulnerability of asking the questions. We've heard this. I was raised this. They told me that. And invite them to do the same thing as we build the relationships of vulnerability to move towards that process of the 150%. Now, so we've got about 10 minutes. Thank you. Questions, comments? What do you want to know more? Like I said, I'm given the time.
I came in experiencing thinking I was going to get one thing out of it and got something totally different, which is fun.
You were hoping to Congress?
I was more internalized it in terms of my own congregation where I worship now. And, I appreciated your porch about listening. In my congregation, we had the core group, Anglo, mainly Scandinavian, and then we ended up bringing in a lot of Laotian, and then a huge Spanish-speaking population from another church joined us. And so what ended up happening was everything was still being ran as the Anglo, and this is an example of not communicating well, was we do Santa Lucia pageant every Christmas. And then, so we brought all the kids together. So we had this whole grouping of different cultures during the Lucia pageant. But then we decided, well, that's our, as Anglos, we decided, well, we're only doing what they, see their culture. So we said, you need to do what you do. You need to explain your culture to us. Well, then we go to the Lao. And, 3 years ago, they were Buddhist. So they don't even have a culture to share. So they didn't know how to present. And then, for a majority of our Hispanic population, much of it is like a parada or something like that, where it's much more social. It isn't like a pageant where you go to and that. So we end up had that first mission one and got through it, and we ended up changing it into afterwards having each different group provides food from their culture, and we all spend time together as that. And then now the Laos, they present some of their traditional dances and stuff like that, and then stuff like that. But it was just an interesting thing about how we didn't listen, but it still was a good learning exercise for us.
So why don't you do a math workshop?
Because, Brian, really, that experience, it is becoming more common in the sense of bringing congregations together than it was before. And part of it is because the dominant annual church is dying. And they're getting smaller and smaller. And if they're looking to survive, they are that's not always the case. Unfortunately, we need to find somebody else out here who looks like us and start joining. Versus the community that has changed around us, we're going to go look for others out here. That's happening too much. But then there are congregations like here who are looking at, okay, what's around us, and we want to be reflective of that. I'm just curious. So the listen part, how would you flesh that out? How would you take it back to your congregation with what you think is right.
In my mind, some of it is understanding that this is a process. Because one of the things that I struggle with is, like, in terms of leadership in our congregation, much of it is Anglo, but there are many barriers for other cultures to step into this leadership, whether it be language, whether it be, we've created policies where if you're going to step in and be youth leaders, you need to do X, Y, Z so that you can be a youth leader. Well, some of that involves background checking. Well, if you have if you're not legal, that is a barrier. So we're fighting that. How do we get that? So I feel my personal belief is that this is a process and that we're looking to the next generation. How are we bringing up this other generation to be this more cross-cultural, to be able to be in both cultures or multiple cultures so that they can be the leaders for our church?
And just a quick comment. Just a reminder that this process is very counter U.S. culture.
Yeah.
Because we are trying fast, quick, and that is the challenge with church leadership in regards to why isn't it happening now? We need to move, and it's not. I mean, because we're talking about dialogue, and it may be in different languages, where as an interpreter, I'm not only having to translate words, I'm having to translate context. I was sharing a joke with some people here who practice their Spanish, which we love. But I was, sharing with them. I put that in the joke, and this is a long joke, but basically the punchline was that there was an interpretation for one of the denominational leaders to a Spanish-speaking congregation, and the man who was interpreting the denominational leader says to the congregation, "Your pastor and I are such good friends, we're like two peas in a pod." So when he interprets in Spanish, it's literal what he said. Mm-hmm. This man is saying that he and the pastor are such good friends that you're made in the same pot. So that's again the other challenge. What you're saying may not be easy to translate, but I've got to contextualize it so that listening even more so when you're talking about different languages, which makes the process even slower. When we're used to results, we communicate this way, and so I would encourage practicing client self-determination at a macro level as you engage them, but also find those that are culturally competent and at least can understand and know how to straddle the dominant culture with their culture, because they've been in. And at least you have people like that in an already difficult, challenging process. Because it is possible, but there's so much work up front. And it's the same thing from institution to a congregation. There's so much work that has to be done up front before you start getting engaged. And in marriage, because the engagement, you're still learning. But there's a long dating process. To build trust and how we share with each other and opportunities. I think the saddest story I heard when I was doing consultation with churches that up in the panhandle of Texas, an Anglo congregation had a Hispanic congregation within that they were working with, and there were some issues going on. And so I just went to the pastor. I said, "How often do you talk to the Hispanic pastors?" "Well, we don't, because he doesn't speak English." And I'm like, "Okay, he's in there, but y'all don't talk to each other. Do you pray together? Do you at least pray together?" Mm-hmm. He's like, "No." You don't even pray together. You don't have to talk to each other. You know what it is. So it's complicated. It's complicated. It's a long process. Anyone else? Comments, questions?
This is basically, I'm not quite getting the 150. Is it like you take two cultures and you meld them together?
Either the micro level or the macro level. I mean,
and you get
a little bit of what I was,
well, that's where the cultural competence comes in.
And again, it's social work practice. It's like, you know, when I'm going to be with my client, I'm working in direct practice. Who are they? Where they're coming from? What's their context? The home visits. You're looking at, okay, what's important? What's on the wall? You know, what are the where do kids fall in this family? They're around all of them, or they're no, go over there. You know, because Mama's busy. You know, you're learning the competency. So your culture, your competency is increasing, and your increasing, you know, the 150 is that, okay, I still got mine, but I'm going to delve into, be vulnerable, and learn more, and then why do you do that, and I've heard this, and where does it come from, so it's gaining the competency of those.
Yeah, I knew that was a, like, fundamental pillar, and I was like, I don't have a grasp on it, so thanks so much, guys.
And she's very helpful with it.
Yes. I haven't read it, obviously.
So, this is just a comment. It sounds like a common theme is humility in this. Mm-hmm. It seems underlying everything, because to be culturally, we talk about this in classes, to be culturally competent, I can never fully be culturally competent before I fully understand you or you or anyone. And so, and I think that's kind of a misconception too, but if we're listening on both sides, like, humility goes a long way, and not rushing. Is that what I'm trying to process?
Humility and vulnerability.
Yeah.
I take it as both. To be able to say, I don't understand what you just did. Would you be willing to explain that? In African-American congregations, I mean, I'm just, you know, my very, very good friends, okay, I understand that dialogue and the interact, but tell me about the expression of that, and why do they, you know, why is it just that, I mean, and for them it's like a no-brainer, but I'm like, what is the significance of that? What does that mean? Is it only just encouraging the pastor, or is there something else going on? You know, as I learn about the, you know what I'm saying? It's just that willing to ask them questions, but really, you know, it helps with, okay, I'm understanding this. So, yes, that along with vulnerability.
Okay.
And it makes it easier when they're teachable. And that's what I kept saying about this. It's a teachable spirit. A teachable is just so hard when they're like, oh, no, this is how we do it.
No? I was thinking about your saying today, even pray together. And thinking that one response might be, well, how can we if we're praying in different languages? And obviously you're saying, God understands both languages, so that's who you're talking to, not a problem. Took me back to several summers ago, we were in Amsterdam and went to church at a international church. And at one point, the pastor said, we're going to pray the Lord's Prayer now, and I want everyone to pray in your own language. So we all prayed the Lord's Prayer out loud. And there were at least, I heard 8 languages immediately around me, and I know there were many more than that. Just such a moving experience, because the prayer was very recognizable, the cadence is similar, and we're all very familiar with it, but in all these languages, it was really sort of a heaven experience.
Oh, and you know what a blessing when you can experience that? Because that's what heaven's going to be.
Yes.
I mean, it's just like, wow, this is heaven on earth.
Except I think in heaven I'm going to understand it all.
That's true.
And we will be understood.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the whole thing about Jesus, you know, we will be known, you know, as he knows us. I think it's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Sister Rose, thank you for letting me use your laptop when
mine
was angry. And Helen, for the advisor, appreciate that. And thank you. I think Rose is here next, so she's going to get ready. But I'm here, and I'm here today. If something else pops up in your mind, you go, hey, let me ask you this real quick. Vulnerability.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to any CSW members, and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.